Hi, today is December 5th, 2011. This is Mobile View's podcast number 55. And for those of you listening, the text of this interview with Dr. Ga Wang from Smule will be available on Inside Mobile Apps. As I mentioned, my special guest today is Ga Wang from Smule, which just bought Kush. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. KHU.SH last week, and I wanted to talk to him about that because both companies have very interesting products. I've been following this company since I think it's an inception in 2008. And in fact, the last time I spoke to Ga was way back in September 2009, right after IMT Pain came out. So tell me, what's for the three people in the world who are not familiar with Smule, can you give us a brief history of Smule? I mean, you're a relatively new company, 2008, right after apps became available, I think.
That's right. So Smule started right when the App Store launched in the summer of 2008. In some sense, it spun out of Stanford and Stanford's Center for Computer Music Research called Karma. And our goal really is to explore expressive audio and music. And through that, through technology, I think enable people to be expressive and to really unlock the creativity that we think is in everyone. So it's really we're making music, making things for, I would say, everyone, the masses, you might say. And also we want to explore kind of a social dimension of making music. So all of our apps have both an expressive music-making component as well as a social one.
Right. So like your first product, I believe, was Sonic Lighter.
That's correct.
And it was, by today's standards, it's kind of very, very simple. But at the time, it was pretty innovative. and one of the interesting social aspects of that was that I think as you lit it up, you could light it different colors, using it as voting even across the world for like polls and that sort of thing. And from there, you just continued on to like singing together with the Glee karaoke app and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so that's exactly right. And Sonic Lighter, there was like the local social component of people being able to give each other lights from their phones through sound. You basically can ignite one Sonic Lighter on one phone with the Sonic Lighter on another. There's also a map of the world, kind of this globe visualization, that showed red dots of where other people are currently using their Sonic Lighters. And then we followed that up with Ocarina, and that was, I think, the app that really put us, I think, on the map, so to speak. And that was, of course, a flute-like instrument for your iPhone. You blow into it, make sound, but you can also hear other people play their iPhone Ocarinas across the world. Then there was Eve Trombone, World Stage, IMT Pain, Glee Karaoke, then Magic Fiddle, and Magic Piano. And also recently we released MatPad.
Right. Yeah, I was just going to say MatPad's really interesting for anyone who hasn't tried it. Basically, you can record related sounds, like I think one of them is a Honda Accord, a door slamming and horns honking and that sort of thing, and make music out of it. It's a lot of fun, although kind of noisy when you let kids play with it. But so Smule has focused really on a couple of really interesting aspects that really didn't, in my mind at least, didn't exist except in laboratories prior to it, and that's the ability to make music on computers easily. Prior to that, you needed special hardware, you needed MIDI interfaces, you needed cables running all over the place, and quite frankly, quite a lot of skill, I think, to make any decent kind of computer music. But with Smule's apps, that really impressed me when it came out was, wow, now anybody can play, reasonably well, some people very well, on your various kinds of apps. Now, do you have any figures on some of the apps? I know that in your announcement of your purchase of Kush, you mentioned that the Ocarina had been downloaded 6 million times, for example.
That's correct.
Do you have any other numbers that you can share with us for either app downloads or app purchases or in-app purchases, which I know is something that Smule has moved into over the last year or two?
That's correct, yeah. So as far as figures, I think we are approaching 20 million total installs. And certainly Ocarina, IMT Pain, and Magic Piano are kind of among our most popular apps. And you know, we actually have, I think, like more than like a billion notes that have been banged out on the Magic Piano. For and you know, there have been literally tens, if not actually over 100 million interactions socially that happen on through the social aspects of our products. That's, for example, people listening to each other on the Ocarina Globe, or participating and singing together in Glee across the world, and or simply just listening to someone else kind of use the T-Pain effect on their voice from somewhere else in the world. So people, the numbers are very encouraging in that people are doing this, but not only making music with these things, but also I think they're participating socially, but in a way that, you know, I think in slightly different definition of what we think of as social these days. This is actually sometimes with people you know, but sometimes with total strangers. For example, a rendition of Lean On Me was started by a woman in Tokyo in the wake of the earthquake and tsunami disaster. She invited subsequently some of her friends to join in and sing with her on Lean On Me. To date, that particular rendition has 5,000 voices on it.
Wow.
And that's from like total strangers all over the world. And that's a song that, you know, it's a very human thing. There's no, you don't need to explain to someone why that song has meaning in that context. And everyone just immediately gets it and they join in. And it's nice because the human element is the only thing that really matters. The technology that enables it is, you know, people don't really think of that. And that's the way we like to keep it as much as possible, is that, you know, we deal with technology every day, but we're always looking to find through music kind of this human element. Sorry to go on a slight tangent there, but that's some of the stats, but also, you know, really what we're after as a company.
Right, and that's one of the interesting things that, you know, until Smule, at least to my knowledge, you know, as an iPhone and iPad user myself, most of the apps you saw were let's call them conventional games, you know, first-person shooters, but then there was a whole set of entertainment apps that emerged. Some of them were like the graphical koi pond, mm-hmm. Where there was no goal except to just have fun.
Yep.
And then Smule came out with your music apps that are Sonic Lighter, and then later the music apps. It really changed the way I think I thought about my iPad. Well, my iPad was not yet, but my iPhone at that point said, wow, this is really a musical instrument now. This is more than just playing my music on the iPod, you know? Like you said, the social aspect was also very interesting. So, you know, one of the things I noticed is that Smule has been changing its revenue model, or maybe changing isn't the right word, but has been modifying it slightly. Most of the apps, I think, were paid apps in the beginning. I think, for example, it was like 99 cents for iPhone and maybe $1.99 or $2.99 for the iPad. But more recently, I've noticed that a number of the paid apps have been converted to free apps. And I assume that means your revenue model is shifting more towards the in-app purchases for songs for IMTP and Glee Karaoke and those kind of things. Is that right, or is there something else going on here?
Actually, that's absolutely right. We are certainly moving more towards this kind of free-to-download experience, so-called freemium model, where it's free to actually download the app. And for that, I think it makes sense for a lot of music-making experiences, because honestly, people really deserve to try it out. And if they like it, then hopefully that we can provide things that are of value to people who have downloaded these apps. And those come in the form of songs, of content, and other kind of, you know, digital goods or contents or services that we provide through our apps. So, for example, our primary kind of first and primary example so far has been Magic Piano for the iPhone. Originally, as you know, it was an iPad app that was launched in April of 2010, right along with the first iPad, actually. And in this year, we actually made it into and that one was a paid app. And then we actually added a lot to it We added a full storefront to sell songs. We also added various features. Lately, we added some features that resemble game mechanics to the Magic Piano for the iPhone. And so, you know, we kind of rolled these out, and the results actually have been really, really good for us, and been very happy, and our users are happy. So, you know, so far it's kind of a by-winning combination, as it were, in terms of kind of the results of the Magic Piano. And that is a model we are fully exploring.
Can you say a bit more about the gaming-like mechanics that have been added to the Magic Piano app?
Sure. So initially, the Magic Piano game mechanic of making music was, it's basically, it has the score to the song essentially baked in. But then it's your responsibility, if that's the word, to actually go and play it, to play it expressively. And so it allows, I think, someone to come in with no actual music training at all, but also to be quite expressive and start making music and really feel good about it and feel like they're actually making the music. Now, what we've added are kind of various ways to give you feedback about how you did after you've played a song or as you're playing a song. And certainly we've added, you know, things like achievements and also try to give you a score of how well you played played each song. And so there's kind of it tracks your progress as you play all the songs. So there's these kind of elements that are both within the core mechanic itself as well as around it. The goal is to make it more fun, to make it also engaging. You know, even if you have like a great mechanic for an interaction, it still can absolutely be helped by actually adding a little bit of gaming element and something that gives it, you know, little goals for people to achieve. In turn, I think, you know, hopefully will happily engage people in the experience.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that absolutely, by the way. I think, you know, all these in various apps and services have badges and achievements, all that are really, really encourage, you know, stickiness to the user to come back and say, yeah, I want to do this again. Yeah, absolutely. Now, obviously, you've been doing well. I know you've gone through a couple of investment rounds. What have the investment rounds been in the last, 2 years or so?
Yeah, actually, we just closed a round quite recently that's led by Shasta, one of our existing investors, as well as participation from other investors as well, from Granite and Bessemer. This was actually no more than, I think, a month ago, actually. And that was a $12 million round added together. And what it's going to do is going to really allow us to even be more aggressive. I think our investors, and these are our, you know, our existing investors, mm-hmm. that have really made this investment, and they are intrigued and excited as we are in pushing forward, and we're very bullish about where we could potentially go. So we're going to grow even faster. We're already doing that now, and we'll be doing that to a great deal in the coming year.
Great. Now that leads me to our original reason for this discussion was your, I assume part of that money went to Kush. in the press release, there was no mention of how the purchase was financed, if it was a cash purchase or stock, private stock, or some combination thereof. Can you talk a little bit about that or the money involved?
Yeah, we're actually not disclosing the actual terms of the deal for
okay.
this. It is cash plus stock, that I can say, but it's more than that. We have not disclosed and we are not going to at this time.
Okay.
I could be happy to tell you certainly more about Kush and Smule and kind of what we hope to do together.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I understand that these kind of matters are a little touchy for a while. But but I'll ask you again to see if you slip. But in any case, so Kush has a really interesting set of complementary products. So where you have IMT Pain, they have Songify, and they have, I think, another app called Kush, which kind of takes a different take on the sort of things you've been doing with modifying people's sounds as they sing and that sort of stuff. What can you tell us about Kush and their team? I understand that the Kush's team, which is based in Atlanta, they're another university-spawned group, will remain in Atlanta, and they'll be function independently. So where do you hope to bring the synergy in your West Coast and East Coast teams?
Absolutely. So I'll start with kind of just giving a brief description of Kush and what they're doing, and then kind of why we're joining forces, and then kind of look to the future about how, you know, what that really means in terms of how we work together and how we can really leverage each other's resources and skills. So Kush originated out of Georgia Tech, and actually one of the co-founders, Parag Chordia, he is a colleague also in the field of computer music. He actually graduated from Stanford, and he is a professor in computer music at Georgia Tech. Kush was founded, I believe, in 2009 by Parag, Purna Gupta, she's the CEO, and Alex. And they have been working on, I think, what they've called intelligent musical applications. And this is to combine machine learning and artificial intelligence with music technology. But the end goal is very much similar to what Smule has been striving for, and that is to actually, through technology, bring music making to a very wide audience, to actually cross the very boundaries that you actually alluded to earlier of whether it's, you know, equipment, whether it's psychology of people thinking, you know, I'm not a musician, therefore I can't really make music. Well, we want to actually defy that very concept and get everyone to play music. And so the way that we've been approaching it, the Kush has been approaching it, has been somewhat slightly different and very impressive, I must say. The first app is La-Di-Da. It's actually a reverse karaoke app. That's actually spelled L-A-D-I-D-A. It basically, you just sing any melody you want into this and can choose the style of how you want it to come out. And what it does is it generates a full accompaniment right under the melody that you've sung, and it always sounds pretty plausible and good. So that's kind of a dream for me, and I think a lot of people. And plus, it's also just a ton of fun to play with. And I think that shows, you know, that it takes a lot. Basically, the computer is essentially writing and composing and arranging the music based on something you've done. And so that's an example of artificial intelligence kind of working together with the person and with technology to create something that everyone really understands right off the bat. What they're doing, it's fun, and therefore people, I think, will feel less inhibited about using it. And you mentioned Songify. Songify is actually a collaboration between Kush and the Gregory Brothers, famous for their work on Auto-Tune the News.
Right.
And, you know, they've been responsible for so many incredible memes, not the least of which is, you know, things like Double Rainbow and Bed Intruder. Those, I think, somehow really get into the psyche of the people on the internet, just, you know, everyone. And what Songify did in Songify, Kush has actually developed this magical technology to really, using your phone, essentially turn any speech into a melody and basically segment it and resynthesize it to pretty much any song. In particular, Songify, it's to kind of the pieces of music that the Gregory Brothers have done to, you know, kind of for Double Rainbow and in Bed Intruder and a lot of other famous memes. It's a toy that people, right out of the box, they just talk into it, and within like 20 seconds, they realize what the app is doing, and suddenly they hear their speech songified, you know, made musical. And it's somewhere between, well, it's impressive and hilarious and it makes it such a wonderful toy. And that's I think the aspect that we all strive for is, you know, we're not really toy makers per se, but in making things that appear like toys or games that actually have an open, expressive musical component to it, achieves this purpose of, I think, initially lowering the inhibition of people to use this. And by the time they're actually making music with these apps, it's like, oh, it's too late. You're already being creative. You're already being expressive, and you know, just do more of it. And it's kind of almost like an argument to subtly nudge people into making music. Takapella is the third app from Kush, and basically it's the same, similar engine, but basically it generates a multi-part harmony based on what you're saying. So these are all offerings from Kush that we've always admired and been very impressed about. And so, speaking to, you know, kind of some of the potential synergies moving forward between Kush and Smule, is that, you know, we share this vision and we're joining forces, and we're really kind of, in some sense, as far as we know, we're like kind of maybe the two kind of only companies that are going about it, in that we make, as you say, musical things, but not necessarily only for musicians or people who know they want to do this kind of thing. We're making it for, you know, as wide an audience as possible. So as we join forces, I think one of the very first things is that, you know, I mentioned this incredible technology that Kush has been developing that really combines artificial intelligence and audio signal processing. And in computer music is actually a field called music information retrieval, MIR for short. There's actually it's a vibrant scene and area in computer music research. There's a conference every year called ISMIR, International Conference on Music Information Retrieval, that explores all kinds of how we might use kind of machine intelligence to aid us to do things musically with computers. In any case, that's a technology that I think could be quite interesting, that we would love to see how we can leverage, both in our existing products and also in future products. So that's one example. Going the other way, you know, Smule has been building this kind of like whimsical, musical, social fabric, for lack of a better word. It's one where we hope where identity can play a role, but also anonymity is also a big component, as I mentioned, getting strangers to sing together. But we want to really develop this out a lot more fully. Between Kush and Smule, we have something like 27 million installs. We believe it can be much bigger, but even, you know, that's a pretty darn good starting point to actually continue to build out our network. So Kush will be part of this network that we're building, this new kind of social musical whimsy network, and helping us to really both achieve critical mass that much faster, but also, I think, to find ways where all the apps that both Kush and Smule have done so far can perhaps interact in some ways socially. So it's to really add to the very foundation and the very the very fabric of this network. So those are two things that immediately I think we'll be working on integrating. But at the same time, as you mentioned, Kush will stay in Atlanta. They are this wonderful, very focused and brilliant team of eight. And so the brands will, for now, remain Kush and Smule, though the synergies kind of will happen, you know, kind of naturally. In the back end, you know, it's, you know, as we see it, both from Kush and Smule's point of view, you know, things seem to be working, and there's no need to fix it in that sense. It's about how we can combine forces to actually achieve our goals more efficiently and more potently. So I think, you know, the other answer is that I think we'll be going forward in seeing what natural synergies will arise, just because we're both so naturally focused, I think, on the same set of goals.
Okay. Before I forget to ask, how many people are in Smule right now?
We are 35 and growing.
Wow. You know, you mentioned a social aspect that's integrated, and it actually has been integrated in all the Smule products since Sonic Lighter. Mm-hmm. My recollection is I tried Songify back in July. In fact, I recorded a mini podcast using it just to see what that sounded like.
Awesome.
When I tried in July, I don't recall a social aspect except for the ability to share your recording via Twitter and Facebook. So by some of the synergy you're talking about, the social networking aspects that are in your products, you mean to bring some of that to Songify, for example? Could we Songify a choir? You know, that sort of thing.
Potentially. And I think we, you know, kind of one of the things we've been doing is always to kind of take experience on a somewhat per case basis, mm-hmm. and see for that particular experience how we can best fit any social dimension on it. We don't really want to kind of just, we definitely try to not just kind of like drag and drop and like say, okay, here, app, take this social component and do something social with it. So I think it's a matter of thinking about how we can, you know, for each of these apps, if it makes sense and how it makes sense to actually add the social component. But you're very much right in that perhaps, yeah, we might be able to see, for example, for Songify users to not only kind of hear, discover what other people are doing with Songify, perhaps to participate in this songification process, and then to discover kind of social relationships and to build maybe new ones. You know, people have, there apparently have been like people who have become like new best friends, who were previously complete strangers in different parts of the world in something like Glee Karaoke. We wonder if, you know, how we can really foster these type of new potentials for social interaction through these apps. And you're very much right. And in the new products that both Kush and Smule will be rolling out, we'll certainly be, you know, really exploring this as one of the first order of I think designing and creating these apps and thinking about how we can really leverage this technology and also this potential for the social interaction. And for the apps that exist, we'll certainly be looking to see how we can gracefully add these various dimensions into the app.
Well, when did, out of curiosity, when did the discussions of, you know, acquiring Kush begin? And I guess, what are your plans for 2012? Do you have a, you know, obviously you have a product roadmap ahead. Can we expect to see something from the synergy between these companies, say, early in 2012 or mid-2012, something like that?
Can't say too much about that. I think Kush and Smule, we've known about each other for, you know, as long as we've both existed, just because we, you know, share so much of actually the same types of personnels. But also, I think we've really learned from each other's products and the way and everything we've gone about in building and also, you know, marketing these products. I can't say exactly, but it's, of course, more recent that we've, you know, started exploring this idea of this acquisition merger of joining forces. And moving forward, I think they're, the, you know, as I mentioned, at least for the short term, I think the plan is, you know, each business unit, Kush and Smule, will continue doing what they do, but in really kind of keeping this heart and eyes and ears open for opportunities for synergy. And so I think that's, at least in the short term, kind of the plan. And we have a fairly, at Smule, we have a very exciting roadmap, as actually does Kush as well for 2.0, but they're kind of still, I wouldn't say parallel so much, but more like kind of, we'll be kind of exploring kind of each, the angle that each, that's in the DNA of each respective business unit, but kind of as a big family.
will new Kush products be branded Kush, or will it be branded Smule?
For the foreseeable future, new Kush products will remain branded Kush.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, this is a very interesting acquisition because really it's still two independent organizations. But I guess now you don't have to sign so many NDAs when you want to talk to each other about collaborating.
Well, that's always an advantage. I think the space of music making through technology is so vast, and it's so much bigger than, you know, even the combined entity that is Cush and Smule. Some have informally and fondly, you know, referred to as Smush or maybe Cool, but I think it's actually advantageous to have diversity in the way we explore how to go about this. And Cush has this in their DNA, this idea of making intelligent musical applications. And Smule, we've always made kind of the, you know, quirky, whimsical, social music making stuff. And this is just two of many different possible avenues that could be taken to explore what music making really means for, the future. So actually having this somewhat parallel track, I think, really makes sense in that it's, you know, I think there could be a disadvantage if suddenly, you know, it's all unified or over-unified. In this case, we are, I think, in a very true sense of the word, a big, happy, you know, app-making family. But at the same time, we're going about it with a common vision, but also kind of different ways of exploring the space. And the space is still so new. This, you know, even mobile, you know, now it's kind of a given. But, you know, as you mentioned, this 3 years before, but 3.5 years ago, 4 years ago, this is, I don't think anyone could have quite dreamed that this is the way that the space would look today. And yeah, who knows absolutely. What's going to happen in 2 years. And like 2 years almost seems like so far down the line. 5 years is just seems like it's so hard to predict what's going to happen on a global scale in terms of how pervasive this technology will be and also when new technologies will come our way. So we live in interesting times in a good way.
Now, you know, two questions just occurred to me is, and I should have thought of it earlier, is one, you know, you've really focused, you're both Cush and Smule are focused on the iOS space exclusively. Have you looked at, say, Android or any other platforms? Or for the foreseeable future, you're going to focus on iPad, iPhone devices?
So, great question. So, we've always focused on iOS. Partly because, well, one, this is obviously the first to actually, I think, get it really right between a killer hardware, software SDK to really be able to develop, you know, killer apps, a critical mass and a distribution that really makes sense for both, you know, our goals and as a business. Now, the Android market is undeniably getting huge. We are exploring, you know, possibility of having of Android and really not any other platforms at this time. What has actually been more difficult is that, and that goes to the other reason why iOS has been really good for us, is that traditionally Apple has always had this focus on making their hardware and software work really great for multimedia. That sound, it's graphics, it's interaction. So for basically those are the things you would want if you want to build like a great game, for example. Now, we're not a game company, but we actually require just the same things. We want low latency audio. We want the various interactions like multi-touch, accelerometer, gyroscope. We want things like GPS, compass, and we want graphics. And now on Android, for some reason, like one of the things that have been difficult for us is actually just getting audio latency to something that is actually reasonable.
Well, and, that's interesting.
Yeah, and that's been kind of, you know, been a show-stopping thing.
Is this, without getting, you know, too deep into it, has it been device specific or is it sort of across the board on it's an Android kind of issue?
I wouldn't say it's an Android kind of an issue, except there doesn't seem to have been an effort, at least early on, to kind of unify and specify this more clearly. So you have, you know, I think as far as we can tell, most of the devices, it's hard to get low latency audio. It doesn't really have low enough, you know, acceptable amount of latency for the audio. And some devices actually are much better than others, but across the board, it varies.
Right.
And with most of the devices so far, today at least, not being able to really support this. And this is just speculating, but, you know, it's a lot of games and a lot of things that require multimedia. They're certainly on Android, but it's still the experience overall, in my personal opinion, isn't as good on Android today.
Interesting.
For the full multimedia immediate experience, but things are getting better. Like graphics on Android is looking pretty darn good. You know, the interaction plus audio is the part that I think still seems to lag.
Interesting. And I think some of that you may also run into some of the fragmentation issue, because there's so many different Android OS releases running concurrently on, you know, current devices being sold. Some are still running, well, most are still running 2.3 in a phone, and there's 3X on the tablets, and Ice Cream Sandwich is coming out, and all.
Yeah, I think some people say this is a huge problem. Some people say this is kind of like, you know, kind of maybe blown out of proportion. I say it really depends on what the heck you're trying to do with it. And for some people, it really isn't a big deal to have this fragmentation. For someone who's really trying to squeeze every ounce of performance out of it to do something cool with technology, when it comes to music or graphics or like kind of some kind of experience, a lot of games, I would think, it's a freaking nightmare to have fragmentation. I mean, it's just trying to keep our test matrix on iOS alone. And that is, I think Apple's done a great job of unifying as much as they can across new generations of hardware and software. Even so, you know, there are invariably differences that we have to account for. And because we want to provide a really great, delightful, pristine experience to our users, we take the pain to make sure everything works well and everything we're supporting. Now, with all the devices that's on Android, for us, and I can't speak for any other developers, it seems like a daunting task, to say the least. So, yeah, device fragmentation is a pretty big deal for us. For some others, it may not be, just because
sure.
of the nature of what it's doing. And for us, can't really see an easy way around it. But you know, like I said, things have changed, are changing so fast, and there's no reason to believe they're going to slow down to change. Right. That's one thing that I think will be constant. So, To answer your original question, I think both Kush and Smule are looking at Android.
Okay. And I guess my last hard question, or maybe not, I've got two soft questions, but one last hard question is, you know, and it may defeat your philosophy. You may say, hey, that's not what we're looking at. But, you know, I was wondering if you and or Kush are, you know, would consider some sort of hardware accessory controllers for your to augment your apps, and or, you know, forgetting the hardware part of it, maybe using gesture recognition in place of, you know, movement, you know, kind of the Kinect kind of model, the Microsoft Xbox model.
Right. So that's actually a good question. Very good question. I think this is a place where I think the answer, it depends, really comes into play again. I think anything's possible, and I wouldn't count any of these out. So that would be the first part of the answer. And so if it makes sense for a particular product, particular technology to actually be embodied in some kind of augmented hardware add-on or some kind of other interaction, yeah, that's certainly something we're not going to count out. The other side to, I think, thinking about this in particular is that we also do want to kind of, we've always kind of been designing things as is, for kind of hardware as they are, for the current state and the current level of distribution and critical mass that they have. And it's almost a discipline that we have to work with exactly what we have and what we don't have. And what is in the hands of, say, like 100 million people, like an iOS device, for example, we don't we don't want to add any more kind of potential barriers to them. We want whatever they have in their pockets today to be able to actually do what, do something that they find fun and musical and expressive. And so now, you know, kind of these, both sides of these, I think, are true. And if there's something that really makes sense, we're not going to count it out. But for now, it's you know, all things being equal, we're gonna really focus on making use of what exactly we have. It's funny, I think, like, people often ask, you know, kind of, what do you wish you had on the iPhone or the iPad that's not there? I'm always at a loss because I just don't think of it that way. I was like, you know, nothing actually. Whatever it is, it's more than we have to work with already to actually hopefully make creative uses of. And there's a ton to work with on it as well already. And it's about discovering, you know, I think you can make music with like a stick and some stones and some pens. Right. And right now we have almost an embarrassment of riches when it comes to technology and components we can use. So while we certainly dream and imagine what are the crazy software, hardware technologies of the future, in our design and creation process, it's one of I think, you know, uber realism of like what is there today. So I hope that.
Okay. No, sure. Yeah, and actually, I like that answer that you know, you let people work with what they have in their hands without having to go out and buy another piece of hardware or something else. It's like singing, right? If you can speak, you've got your instrument. And in this case, if you've got an iPad and iPhone, you've got your instrument. Right. There's nothing else needed.
Exactly. You got your iPhone, you got your iPod, you got your iPad, you got you, which is like the most important element. And you kind of bring those together and maybe that should be all you need. Because, you know, I think if you think about kind of the trend, it's like, yeah, what do we really always carry with us? For me, I carry my phone, my keys, and my wallet. You know, there's no reason to think that these things actually need to even be separate. It's more like we're carrying hopefully less and less things. And the one thing that I always carry with me, even if I left my wallet and my keys, I probably will carry my phone. And so it's like, you know, if there's any more components to that, at least in today's world, I think the trend seems to be, you know, just collapse everything onto this ever, you know, more powerful computer, very personal computer that we have with us. So we want to, I think, as long as that trend seems to continue, I think we want to truly take advantage of that.
Okay, and before I let you go, I gotta ask you, what's your favorite Smule app and what's your favorite Kush app?
Ah, good question. Well, I think it kind of depends on the time of the day for the Smule app. For Kush, I've used La-Di-Da and Songify a lot, both of those, and I love them both. Gosh, to try to pick something among La-Di-Da, Songify, and Tacapella, that's pretty hard. I think I'm gonna have to go with Songify. There's like this undeniable and such immediate delight you have using that product. Right. That I think if I had to choose, I would say that's, you know, that one has it. But it's hard.
And what about one of your Smule babies?
Yeah, well, let's see. That has gone, usually, like, sometimes we think maybe it's our latest product. Or
which would make sense.
Which would make sense. But then, you know, you do think about the IMT paints and the Ocarina that I think have, you know, I think the app,
the groundbreaking.
Well, the apps that I think that kind of defined us initially was probably Ocarina, in that it itself didn't do much, but it kind of, I think it gave us a glimpse of what we could do in the future, and it gave people like through the globe to say it's not, you know, it started out as a toy, you blew into your phone, but then you could listen to other people, and there was something kind of magical about that, and so I may have to categorize this one as in kind of like an Oscars type thing, or maybe Razzies type thing. It's like the worst app, and you know, I think T-Pain is the one that really connected, both T-Pain and Ocarina really connected viscerally with people. I think Leaf Trombone World Stage was the one that's kind of our earliest game that we've ever made, before we even knew we were making games. And, you know, Magic Piano is currently just getting a lot of people to play music, and that's our fastest growing user base. So, I don't know, I think they're kind of all our babies. Gosh, it's also hard to pick.
I'll leave it at that then.
This is the hardest question.
The hardest, soft, easy question, right?
Yes.
Well, I just wanted to mention, you know, as you were talking about Kush's La-Di-Da and Songify, although some people may think that's easy to do, you know, I just remembered Microsoft Songsmith. I don't know if you remember that, but
that
did not go over well at all. And so it's pretty amazing that, you know, that Kush's take on it has taken off. Where Songsmith, I don't think anybody except you and I maybe remember it.
Oh, yeah. People, you know, kind of remember that. Well, I think part of that, honestly, is that it's not just the technology itself is actually very impressive what Kush has done. And I would say, to be fair to Songsmith, that technology that's running in there is also pretty freaking amazing. I think there is a question of perception, that, at least in my opinion, around kind of how you deliver these experiences.
Ah.
Now, La-Di-Da, for example, is reverse karaoke, much like Songsmith.
Mm-hmm.
But it's delivered on this everyday device and for, like, you know, a very small amount of money that you can actually then get the experience, try it, and it's already in your hands. There's nothing too deliberate about it. And I think, and also the kind of how one goes about actually presenting these experiences, new things to people. So at some point, it transcends the technology. It's kind of the psychology of how such a technology is in a product and how that product is then presented to people. For more than ever, or maybe as much as ever, I would say, like, the products, it's the total package that really will determine whether a product is gonna move forward or not.
All right. Well, thanks for that. Again, thank you for taking time out of your schedule to speak with me. This has been Mobile Views Podcast number 55. The text of this, or version of the text of this, will be over on Inside Mobile Apps at some point in the near future. I want to thank Dr. Gao Wang from CTO and co-founder of Smule, and also, I believe, an assistant professor at Stanford University. Thanks again so much for your time. I always enjoy my chats with you. I learn a lot, and you always bring an interesting perspective on what's going on in a very interesting, I don't even want to call it a niche market anymore. It's a pretty big market, but a very interesting new market, because this really didn't exist until iPhone App Store opened up in 2008. Thank you again, and we'll talk to you later, folks.
Thank you very much, Todd.